welcome to the latest episode of The Booming Curmudgeon. A brief apology about this episode. The edits are a little choppy, so bear with me. We'll do better next time. Thanks. Enjoy the episode. On today's episode, we're going to tackle an interesting topic of late, which is incompetence in government. One of the things that I've noticed with the wildfires happening in Los Angeles is a general lack of competence with respect to the governing individuals that were responsible for being prepared as a community to handle the wildfire. So we have a couple of people involved. You have the mayor, you have the governor, you have the city officials. Those are essentially the main individuals in government who are responsible to make sure that the community is safe. From everything I could determine, it seems like they were ill-prepared for a predictable event. Here's what I mean by that. You basically have a dry underbrush and forested area. You have lack of rain, and you have high winds this time of year. So these Santa Ana winds kick up, and anyone who knows wildfires knows that if you combine dry underbrush, forested area, high winds, and no rain, you're going to be susceptible to anything starting a fire is going to create a wildfire that's going to be easy to lose control of. This is just my take looking from the outside in. I don't pretend to be a forestry fire prevention expert. We take the governor, we take the mayor, and we say, okay, what did they not do? As I understand it, there are forestry techniques of clearing underbrush to de-risk areas for fire. Not a problem. That seems to be a make sense solution. It doesn't necessarily eliminate the risk of fires, but it de-risks them. It lowers the risk of fires so that when a fire does start, it doesn't spread as rapidly. It doesn't take on a life of its own, so to speak. That's important, okay? It seems that they failed to take that into account in terms of their regular day-to-day administration and management of these areas, even though they recognized and everybody knew that there was a high risk of wildfires. They've had wildfires before. They've just not spread to the residential areas in such a profound and deadly way. Then you say, okay, well, when the fire occurs, what is our response going to be? And how do we want to be prepared as a community for that? So we want to have, obviously, firefighters, we want to have equipment, we want to have availability of water, we want to have those things that a community would have in place so that if a wildfire were to start, they would have the capacity to fight it in some meaningful way. In this particular case, let's take the general Los Angeles area. If you look historically at the population statistics in 1960, population of LA was 2.5 million. In 2020, population rose to 3.9 million. That's obviously a 60-year period of time, but in terms of scale, it makes sense that it would grow that much, but the math is real simple. It grew 1.4 million on top of 2.5 million, so greater than 50% growth in population. Now let's look at the infrastructure to support that population. In 1960, there were 112 fire stations for the 2.5 million residents. 60 years later, in 2020, we only have 106 fire stations for the 3.9 million residents. So you had a growth of 1.4 million residents and a reduction in overall fire stations of 6. To me, someone's dropped the ball from a community planning and from a public safety perspective, and all they can do now is, well, they really can't do anything. They don't even have a good excuse for it. So as I listen to the mayor and the governor address this, they seem to be, everyone's pointing fingers at other people, suggesting it's someone else's fault. They're suggesting, no, it wasn't my fault that we did this. So then let's talk about another preparation item, water, availability of water. As I understand it, and the news reports have crossed all the media, not just conservative media, not just liberal media, but all, is that there was a lack of water available to fight the fires once it hit the residential areas. So you have a community with fire hydrants, you have firefighters that are going in to try and stop the blaze. In some cases, you have the actual residents themselves trying to put out fires at their home, or at least protect their homes by dousing them with water, etc. And they hooked up and they had no availability of water. Now, I'm sorry, But you can't claim that that's a confluence of events that is not predictable. You know you have a high susceptible wildfire area. You know that you have these high winds that come. You know that in order to fight fire, you need water. And the communities have effectively not prepared well for that. I put that on the leadership. I got to call a spade a shovel, which is you look at those leaders and you say, okay, what kind of competence do they have? Now, I recognize that's the current mayor and it's the current governor. And we're talking, this has happened over really effectively a 60-year period of time. I don't know what it was like prior to 1960, but I do know this. Over that 60-year period of time, nobody raised their hand and said, you know, we've grown over 50% in population, but we've actually reduced the number of fire stations. How about we fund those? So California, in all its brilliance, has devoted $50 million not to the protection of its citizens, not to the protection of property, not to the rebuilding of their community, but to fighting the Trump agenda. By the way, they voted for this during the wildfire devastation. And that simply tells me that their priorities are messed up. They're going for politics. They're going for showmanship. They're going for emotion. And they're ignoring the basics of every government that has responsibility for its citizens, which is to protect the citizenry, make sure that we have the ability to deal with predictable outcomes and negative things that happen in the community. We're talking crime, we're talking fire, we're talking basic public service, whether it be water, electric, etc. And that they provide for the infrastructure that allows its residents to be safe. In that regard, I see a huge failure of leadership over an extended period of time. What do I think the foundation of it is? Obviously, politics is politics. You have different constituencies that you answer to as an elected official. Yet, you also have all of the citizens to protect, not just the ones that elected you, but those that didn't elect you, people that voted for someone else. And that's really a nonpartisan thing. So what happens when partisan politics gets in the way of basic public safety is you really have a swinging of the pendulum of priority for elected officials, where their priorities are misdirected to things that are emotional. They may even fulfill promises they've made to certain constituencies. And I think that's fine and good, provided that you have the basics covered as government. Look, if you've got fire protection and you've got police protection and you've got basic running water, you've got municipal services, you've got sewer, you've got all those things covered, and you've got a whole bunch of extra money laying around, and you want to fight Donald Trump's agenda, okay, have at it. But if you want to spend $50 million to fight the Trump agenda, I'm not quite sure what that is, but from what I've seen, it's aggressive, it's conservative. I recognize my friends on the left would call it a little bit extreme. But all I've seen right now is they're removing murderers and rapists and child molesters and criminal gang that are non-citizen from our communities. I don't know how anyone from either side of the aisle could complain about that. But if that's the way the Trump agenda is being rolled out, which, and I know there's more to come with respect to immigration particularly, but right now they're removing criminals from our streets. And yet there's a lot of hand-wringing about, oh no, we can't possibly do that. We're going to be taking the grandparents away. I saw a thing with Selena Gomez crying, fitfully crying. And I wonder, where were the tears for Lake and Riley or the Nungri girl that was raped and killed by illegal alien criminals? Removing those people from our country should be a number one priority of any leader. And the fact that for the last 4 years, nobody was removing these people. The fact that we've done it, and I say we, the country has done it in the first 7 days of the current administration, says that it could have been done 4 years ago. It could have been done 3 years ago, could have been done a year ago, and our leaders failed us. So getting back to the wildfire, our leadership had their priorities skewed. They were focused on the wrong thing. They did not have the basics of protection of its citizens in place before they went off and did whatever other initiatives, and I'm not sure what those are, but I have a sense that involved things that weren't for the basics of public safety, protection, etc. They have a significant homeless problem in Los Angeles. I know we have it in a lot of city areas, so I don't necessarily point to that as an unusual thing. But hear this, the number of homeless fires in Los Angeles doubled from 2020 to 2023. It's a 3-year period to an astonishing 38 fires per day. And over half of the fires that the fire department responds to in Los Angeles are started by homeless people. Do you think they ought to try and tackle the homelessness in the area rather than spend $50 million to battle the Trump agenda, whatever that means? It's just incompetent how they can face their electorate and their citizen with a straight face and say, yes, these are the things we should be doing, when the facts are the facts. That old expression, the facts don't care about your feeling, is appropriate here. And I know it's a little snarky, but that's the truth. We need to get ourselves as a country into a position where we look at common sense and say, you know, it does make sense that we remove rapists and murderers and thieves and gang members that have no legal status in our country. We should remove those and send them back to the country they came. I really feel like we all ought to be able to agree on. The fact that we can't agree on that as a country disturbs me. I can't even fathom the explanation about why that would be good. We have sanctuary cities that aren't honoring detention requests from ICE for criminals that don't belong in our community. And the leaders are effectively saying to their residents of their area, we don't care about your safety. We have a political agenda that we're looking at. And I'm sorry, but that's incompetent. There's no other way to dress that up. Incompetence, plain and simple. And when you look at the wildfires, back to that, incompetence that we have a known area that's susceptible to fires. We've effectively done nothing to mitigate that over time. Why wouldn't they clear the underbrush in a wooded area in California? Does it have something to do with an animal species that it might be injuring their habitat or affecting their habitat such that it would put those squirrels or whatever at risk? I'm going to guess there's some of that. And if there is, effectively saying that the people aren't important, but these things are important. And again, it's about priority. Where are the priorities of our leaders of our country, of our communities? And if those priorities are not directed to the citizens and saying our priority is the safety and well-being of our citizens first and foremost, and we have to have that covered no matter what. And if that means that the squirrel is going to suffer because we're going to take some underbrush out that they use for shelter, so be it. There are a lot of people that are highly concerned for populations of animals and rodents and whatever that are in our forests. And I appreciate that because I love animals too. But you know, if those people that are all up in arms about that are out there eating steak or hamburger or ham, chicken, recognizing that we're out there breeding and killing these for food, which I don't object to. I've gone around the bend with being vegan, being vegetarian, being an omnivore, but never for political reasons, all for health reasons. So I was never for can't eat a chicken because cruel to chickens. But if I look at the activists that, and maybe they are all vegetarian and vegan, good for them. It shows that they're not hypocrites, but I'm going to guess that some of the people lobbying for some of these environmental protections may actually be meat, which carries with it a little bit of a hypocrisy. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things that bothers me about public figures and public servants and, you know, people generally, is hypocrisy. The rules for thee are not for me. That kind of attitude that says, I have a cause, it's whatever it is, pick your cause, and then applying a different standard for yourself with respect to something that intersects with that cause. It's the one wagging their finger at someone else, or put it in biblical terms, it's the one saying, let me get that speck out of your eye, and ignoring the log in their own eye. That's the hypocrite. So we have a lot of that happening. We have a lot of it happening in politics. We have people that say things that don't make sense at all. They make no sense. And yet they're defended because it fits their political ideology. And I think to myself, why don't we just be real? Why don't we just put common sense in? Why don't we ignore party for a second and just do the right thing for our citizens? Why don't we not spend money on stupid stuff? Because when we do those things, we do dumb stuff. When our elected officials do dumb stuff, they lose all credibility. And the problem with our population is we continue to vote these people in despite the fact that they do dumb stuff all the time. Look, I've taken the red pill. I'm a conservative for a lot of reasons, but it is who I am. And I recognize that my friends on the left and others on the left, all people at the left, have taken the blue pill to some degree. And I'm biased, and I do watch conservative media. And yet every once in a while I tune into liberal media because I do not want to be the person that says I only get my information from one particular but at my core, I'm a conservative. And I don't have a problem with liberal people at all. I have many people, many friends, many family members that I love dearly. despite the fact that we may be philosophically opposed in our political leaning. I believe that we can be in relationship with people when we disagree. I do believe that. I believe it's okay to see something from two different perspectives and have a different take on it. And it doesn't make either of us evil or wrong. We can see something through two different sets of eyes from a different perspective. And I think the important thing about maintaining relationship is that we have a level of empathy for each other in how we see those and why we might see from our own life's experience, from our own upbringing and background, from things that have happened in our lives that have caused us to see it in a particular way. And I like that I can take opposing viewpoints and see them with a level of empathy that allows me to understand where the other person is coming. Doesn't mean I necessarily will agree. It doesn't mean that my life's experience is the same. I see it differently because my own life's experience, opinion about something, whatever it is. And I recognize that we're a country that's largely divided ideologically into conservatives and liberals, and that's just the way it is. But we've always been a country that can get along with one when we differ. I believe that incompetence in government is something that we can all agree on. When someone's dropped the ball and we can't protect our citizens, that's a problem we should all agree on. That's one of the reasons I have difficulty with the current immigration discussion going on, particularly with respect to deporting actual criminals that have committed crimes in our country that do not belong here according to the law. And they don't make this country better at all. We can have a debate about whether illegal immigrants that come over to our country without proper documentation or process make our country better or neutral or worse. That's a reasonable debate that different-minded people can have with one another. I could certainly make my case for how I see that, and it's probably more complicated than you might think. But certain things we should be able to agree on. And because of political ideology, when we bow up and simply say, I can't agree with that because it goes against whatever position I've taken, even though it makes common sense, that's a problem. So if our political leaders say, look, let's protect our country. We're going to have known criminals coming in to our country that we're not sufficiently staffed to vet them. We invite them in through ports of entry, through a CBP app. We do catch and release, where we catch people and three years later, they may have an appointment with a immigration's agent if they show up. And beyond that, they just meld into our society. It's a problem. We can't absorb that into our country effectively. You have gangs and the reason I know we have gangs is because they're arresting them all. In the first week, we had over 2,000 individuals arrested across the country and deported. That didn't happen by accident. There was an open border policy, and I think we should all be able to agree that that's incompetent. There's an incompetence to that that is really almost unfathomable, and yet we have debate about whether what ICE is doing is good or bad. I just don't understand. I think it's incompetence, pure and simple, that these people ended up being in our country. Certainly you could say, well, look, with all the efforts and so forth, you could have reduced that in some way, shape, or form so that we don't have that many, that you don't have gangs taking over apartment buildings in Colorado. You don't have criminal rapists that are attacking people at the University of Georgia. Surely we could have lowered the incidences of illegal aliens that were criminals by simply putting effective border controls in place. That's incompetent. Except that it makes you wonder, was it done purposefully? Because these are not unknown concepts. Surely it's like the wildfires. If you open the border, do you believe that criminals from their home country would come into our country to take advantage of our citizens? Is that a predictable thing? I think it is. So here's the question, and it's really rhetorical. Is someone trying to break down the fabric of the things that make America, America? Is that something that some part of the political spectrum wants to happen? Because otherwise, I can't explain it. I can't explain why we would allow it. I can't explain why, for the last 4 years, we've not taken any action against these illegal alien criminals. I don't understand. So there you have it. Incompetence in government. Two areas. Wildfires, public safety and communities, and illegal immigration and allowing of criminals into our country unvetted, and uncontrolled. I believe the last administration was culpable, and I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they were incompetent in their administration of the border. However, don't believe they're dumb. And that's the part of me that's really strongly believes they've done it on purpose. And I think that's worse. So maybe I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say it's incompetence. I think it's on purpose. I think it was on purpose. The fact that they ignored it as an issue when it was so controllable makes me just wonder why someone would do that to our country. That's a problem. I know everyone wants a better life, but there's no way we could handle full open borders because everyone would come to our country and our country would implode economically, socially. It would be a bad thing. Every country in the world has borders that are maintained. They have rules for visas and working and becoming citizens of those countries that are adhered to. I couldn't go into another country like others come into our country and successfully stay there without running afoul of the law. And we have people in our country that say, no, that shouldn't be a problem, ideologically. And I guess I understand the compassion in that point of view, but I don't understand the practicality in that point of view, that sustainability of that model, which is, look, just open borders, everybody can come here because we have no control over who makes up our population. And I think as a country, as a sovereign nation, I think you need to have something in place to have immigration control. And by the way, we do have immigration laws. They were just not being enforced. That's the issue. It's not about this bill that Biden and Harris touted during the campaign process. Oh, we just need a bill. We've just shut down the border without a bill. So don't give me that. We need a bill. That is a total crock. So that's the one side, the immigration side. The wildfire side, I think that's incompetence. I don't think anyone knowingly puts their citizens in danger like that and say, you know, oh, but I think it's rolling the dice. I think there's enough information about the risk that they were just rolling the dice. And I think the incompetence that they allowed those insurance companies to leave the state, I think the economic repercussions of those wildfires in LA is going to be devastating. That's going to be the legacy of the mayor of Los Angeles and the governor of California, because their policies have really chased away the insurance company. The federal government's going to end up picking up the tab. And I guess I'm okay with that, because I think if something like that happened in my state, I would, as a citizen, want my government to step in and help me. But as a citizen of another state, that's going to help pick up that tab. I think to myself, well, wait a second, those buffoons caused this to happen. It's like anything. If someone else costs me money and I have no say in it, that really is irritating. And I think that's the other 49 states are going to look at this and say, boy, they really dropped the ball there. Why are they electing these buffoons that put public policy in place that doesn't protect its citizens and further costs the rest of the country to fix it? And then you layer on top of that that they've got these skewed priorities with their own money. I'm sure they're running a deficit, so it's really not their own money. They're just going to borrow it from someone. Again, fiscal mismanagement and fiscal irresponsibility. But who's elected these people to do that? And guys, at some point, don't you bear the brunt of that? But again, that's not the system we live in. We live in a system where, you know, as United States of America, we're kind of a family that says, look, if my kid has a financial difficulty and I have the capacity to help them, I will, right? That doesn't mean I won't have an opinion about how they might want to manage that going forward. And I think you're going to see that play out over time as they kind of recover from this disaster. I think there'll be political ramifications, competent leadership they've had. I think those people will be elected out of office. And if they're not, that would shock me, number one. And number two, the next go around, we might have to say, guys, at this point, if you didn't get rid of those leaders after what they've done or failed to do for you and your community, then you kind of deserve what you get. So hopefully the people in California will wake up. They will elect responsible leadership. And I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican. They just need to be responsible. That's what I'm talking about. It's not political ideology. I take criticism with the whole, let's spend $50 million to resist Trump versus buying fire engines or fixing water systems or doing something that makes sense for the population. I don't understand. And I won't in this podcast. So it is what it is. And I wish the people of California nothing but the best. My family and I pray for them every night along with others. And we do wish them, same with the people in North Carolina. And I pray for our leaders as well. I want competent leadership at every level, federal, state, local. And I am hoping that we as a nation can continue to come together in a more unified way. And I think this notion of common sense seems to be one of those things that we should be able to agree on. If we drive our public policy based on common sense thing, and I know that that's a utopian view, but if we do focus on the things that you can apply common sense to in some way, I guess two different people can look at two common sense solutions can be different solutions to the same problem. But let's just say for argument's sake that we can look at something and say, look, common sense is something we should be able to agree on. I hope that we focus the efforts of our government on the common sense side of the shop, and therefore we can actually move forward in a direction where we actually move the country in a direction rather than just get stuck in this perpetual cycle of things that don't make, can't apply common. So I'm hoping that we can come together as a nation on those things. Let's continue to agree to disagree on the things that don't make sense to either side, but common sense should be a unifying thing. So if we can come together on those things as a nation, I will be very, very encouraged. So I continue to be hopeful for the next 4 years. Let's see how it plays out. And let's see if we can't come together as a nation and kind of be unified as a country once again, because we've been dividing ourselves, particularly over the last 20 years. It's unfortunate, probably even more so over the last 15. So let's do it. I thank you for listening today, and I wish you all the best. And hope to talk to you soon.